Well, good morning to each and every one of you. If you're here visiting, we're glad that you have come our way. We hope that we can encourage you and help you in your service to the Lord. If you will, open up your New Testaments to Hebrews, the 11th chapter. We'll use verses 24 through 28 in a minute. I know this summer we preached on the Hall of Faith, and I know this lesson will come from that, and I can't remember if this overlaps with one of the guys that picked it, but I've been assigned these topics by a church in Lubbock to do a young people's deal for them in the 1st of March, so you will be hearing character studies. Some of them may come out of Hebrews 11, so I'm trying to do fresh lessons for that, so sorry for the repeat if we're going back in the summer and thinking about it. Think about the story of people. Do you ever, I know I'm weird, so I wander around in cemeteries after we bury somebody because I'm always interested in what people put on their tombstones. It's amazing what people write. Sometimes there's nothing. Sometimes there's just the birth date and the death date, and then, as we would think about, a dash between those two things. And as I look at that dash, I think that can't be all there is about this person. That I know is her or his birth date, I know their death date, but there's so much that is left out of that dash. What's that person's story? They're most likely buried in this cemetery because they lived at some time in this community. They may not have always lived here, but this community had something to do with their life that was important to them, and that's why they are here, or what their remains are. In the 1800s, in 1839, July exactly, there was a ship that was called the La Amistad, or Amistad, that was a Havana Cuban slave ship. It was meant to transport, after the transporting of slaves to the Isle of Cuba, and then plantation owners would buy them, then this particular vessel transported them to their buyers wherever they were in the Spanish world, the New World. But there was a mutiny that occurred, as you may know about this particular incident, by the Mende. They were the tribe that was mostly enslaved. They killed some of those who were the crewmen, the captain of the ship, and they ordered the rest of the crewmen to sail them back to Africa. But since they didn't know anything about sailing, they were depending upon the Spanish crew to do that, but they maneuvered the ship northward, and eventually they were captured off of Long Island in New York by the United States Navy, and then engulfed a great legal battle. You can imagine that this preceded our Civil War, and so there was a great deal of emphasis put upon whether these were free men who were rightly opposing their oppressors, like we did to England, or were they slaves and therefore had no rights before the law? And eventually that case made it to the United States Supreme Court in 1841 in U.S. versus the Amistad. In a great turn of events, John Quincy Adams, who was no longer president of the United States, was now a representative. Congressman-elect from Massachusetts for 17 years. He's the only president that ever stooped down to, after he was president, serve as a congressman. He tried the case before the United States Supreme Court. In the movie of this event, he is visiting with a man by the name, which was true, Mr. Josephson, who was a runaway slave who had escaped from Georgia, who had prospered in the North, who had become a free man. But as they are discussing the incident of the Amistad, and they are asking John Quincy Adams to take the case because they need somebody who can argue it at that level before the Supreme Court, in the movie, John Quincy Adams asks Josephson, what is their story? What is the story of these people? And all he knew was, well, they originated, we finally have figured out, in West Africa, in Sierra Leone. But that's all that he knew about them. And so John Quincy Adams asked him, said, Mr. Josephson, is that all of your story? Where are you from? He said, Georgia. Is that all there is about you? You're a Georgian? No, he said to him. You threw off the shackles of your master. You escaped at great cost to your life. and you made it to the north, and I am sure have overcome lots of obstacles in your life to get to the point where you are. That's your story. You need to go back and find out what is their story. Because it's who can tell the best story in the courtroom is going to win the case. What's the story of Moses? He is some individual that I think if you were to ask the question, with which Bible character do you most easily identify? Moses would not come to my mind, and I doubt he would come to yours. Because we are really asking to get in the skin of that person and become that person, as it were. And I don't easily identify. This is Moses, out of reach Moses. This is Moses of the law of Moses. This is Moses of the Red Sea crossing, which is the picture on the overhead. This is Moses of the 10 plagues against Egypt, the shining face of Moses that talked to God. And some of God's glory was left on his face when he would come down back to the people of God, and he'd have to put the veil over it because they were so afraid. This is the law, or rather the 10 commandments, Moses. I don't easily identify with him, do you? And yet, we need to learn from him. We need to look at the story, and the story that I want to pick is essentially what the author in Hebrews 11, verse 24 through verse 28 tells us about him. Read with me. By faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. If I were going to write a thesis statement of this passage, it is to me what occurs at the end of verse 27. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Isn't that the beginning of what he tells us faith is? Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. None of us, even Moses himself, could not touch God, could not see the face of God and live as it was in his case when he asked to see God. He got more of that experience than you and I will ever have access to. But it still says that he had to endure as seeing him who is invisible. And there are a number of decisions that Moses makes in the verses that we read that are shaped by his faith. And the first one comes to us at verse 24. Read it again with me. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. The Greek phrase, when he grew up, is literally having become great. Moses faces a fork in the road, as all paths in life, all of us. This is where we can at least learn things that we will similarly face to him. Ours may not be as cataclysmic. Ours may not be as great. We're not as great a person as he is. He was great and mighty, as we're going to find out, even in Pharaoh's household, even in Egypt, he was known. But regardless of that, every one of us will reach forks in the road for which we have to go to the right or to the left. One road we can see is wide and attractive and appealing. It's fun. It's enticing. It satisfies this body, this mind, this earthly set of mind. And so we see many people traveling it. But we look off to the right and there is a narrow, rugged, unpopular road with almost no one on it. And if we take it, we are going to experience great difficulty. And we have never needed light so much as we need it at the fork in the road. And Moses makes his first crucial decision when he had to ask himself, will I continue to look Egyptian, live Egyptian, love Egypt, as maybe Pharaoh elect high up in the power of that palace? Or would he choose the unseen, unknown, lonely, ugly, hard road that leads to God? And he made his choice. He refused, the text says, to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Literally, the Greek says, denied it to be said the son of Pharaoh's daughter. How foolish. If we were to look at somebody like that, how foolish, how stupid could a person be to reject all the power and glory, to be at the height of what men want to obtain in this world, to be at the very point that everyone's heart beats for, and then to refuse it and walk away. Years ago, a friend of mine, Frank Walton, married his wife. At that time, he didn't know her. He had cast eyes on her, he said. He wanted to get to know her. But he had been the top Bible salesman in the Knaves Topical Bible, if you remember that Bible. And he was the top salesman in Middle Tennessee, maybe the entire state of Tennessee. This particular class was in marketing, and so they asked Frank to come and speak about how did he do that? How did he get to be the top salesman, sell more Bibles than anybody that was in that area? Maybe it was wider than that. I forget the story. His wife-to-be happened to be in the class, but she wasn't a believer. When Frank went through all of the spiel and they're talking about things that relate to marketing, they asked him at the end of the class, what are you going to be after you graduate? And he unhesitatingly said, I'm going to be a preacher of God's Word. His wife-to-be, who he wanted to get to know better, looked at him and in her mind thought, what a failure. What an absolute and utter waste is what she said, she thought. And that's exactly what anybody looking at Moses would think. I denied it to be said of me that I am the son of Pharaoh's daughter. When Stephen spoke of him in Acts 7:22, he said, and Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Imagine the three great places that there was wisdom attached in the ancient world was Babylon, was Antioch, and was Egypt. And he was mighty in his words and deeds. What comes after that, folks, is the things that we know when he draws near to God and does the things that we read about and are going to talk about in this lesson. But that phrase has to do with what he did in Egypt. We don't know what he did, except what battles did he fight for Pharaoh? He was 40 years old when he came to know God. He was 40 years old. What mighty works did he do and projects and monuments he may have been a part of? He was mighty in words and deed, and yet all of that he gave up. When he got to the fork in the road, he took the narrow, ugly, lonely path toward God. And the same lesson is going to be true of you and me. We have to, the very first words we must learn, if we're going to be anything in God's kingdom, the words, no. No, I will not be like the rest of the world. I will refuse, first of all, myself. In Matthew 16:24, Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And folks, that's going to mean a great many things. But in Colossians 3 and verse 9, it says, do not lie to one another. And he says anger and other things in the verse before that. And he says, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices. We have to deny ourselves if we are going to take the road that Moses took. Sometimes we're going to have to deny family. He did. He had to refuse to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Do you think she loved him? Do you think there were the bonds, the familial bonds that drew him into Pharaoh's home, even maybe to Pharaoh himself? Things that aren't spoken, but we can imagine that he was accepted in that household because he did mighty deeds and words in the Egyptians. And so that love that he would have felt for this adoptive mother and all of those ties that he had to refuse that. He had to say no to his family. And folks, if you don't think you're going to have to say no to your family in serving God, you just don't know what it is to serve God. Not everybody in your family is going to follow God. I'm going to clue you in. And what that means is that at some point you're going to have to refuse the people that are the closest to you upon planet Earth. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And you and I have seen far too often people love son and daughter in this church more than they love God. Because they're not telling them what they need to tell them. If you do not change your ways, we're not going to go on having this wonderful relationship as a family. Because the choice is this choice, serve God or don't serve Him. But if you don't serve Him, there's consequences. Moses refused fame and fortune, just like Paul later. Whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For His sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, in order that I may gain Christ. Paul, who reached the top of the Jewish world, who was at the apex of everything, yet threw it aside because it was worthless in light of knowing Jesus Christ. And then, folks, do you think Moses had to throw away friends? Do you think he had princes that he grew up with? And he had brothers that he knew who were Egyptian? Do you think he had friends that he had to say, I will not walk with you anymore? In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And yet, too many, upon obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ, sometimes do not let go of the past. They don't let go of family. They don't let go of friends. And it drags them down. And they do not ever become the true servants that they could be, because they were unwilling to learn this first word that Moses learned about faith. You have to refuse certain things. Secondly, the text says, look with me if you will to the next verse, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. That word chose there, choosing, means in the Greek literally to take for oneself a position. When Moses came to the fork in the road, before he could go to the right or to the left, he had to, in his mind, take a position. Otherwise, he would have been paralyzed at that point, not knowing whether to go right or whether to go left. How many people have you seen do that? Who they just never make the decision. They never follow through with it to go right or left because they just can't bear the consequences sometimes of what it means to take a position. And so they try to remain neutral. Do you think that will work with God? Nobody likes people who are neutral. Switzerland thought they could, the Alps protect us, we can sit out the war. Has anybody ever raised the Swiss flag and said, boy, those are brave people? No, you either made your choice for the Nazis or you made your choice for the Allies. In the Cold War, you made your choice for the Soviet Union or you made your choice for freedom and democracy in this world. The people that thought they could remain neutral and just not take any decision are despised because they're despicable. And that is the way it is not only in politics, it's the way it is absolutely with God. He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. Make your choice. Because you will make it. Daniel in the lion's den? Make your choice. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace? Make your choice. Abraham, offer your son Isaac as a sacrifice to me. Make your choice. Noah, build an ark though it has never rained. Build an ark. Make your choice. And so Joshua would say at the end of his life to his people, and if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river, the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Or when Elijah stood upon Mount Carmel and he looked at the people as he had built the altar to God and as they had danced around Baal's altar all morning, he said, Elijah came near to the people and said, how long will you go limping between two opinions, different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal, then follow him. But make up your mind and quit being like you can serve both of them at the same time. What it means when we take a position for ourselves is that we must weigh the positions in the balance. You remember King Belshazzar was weighed in the balance and found wanting. What we do with a balance scale is that you weigh something and something's going to weigh more than the other if you're doing it on both sides of it, we think about it. And so as we reason about something and we think about this way that goes to God and this way that goes to the world, whatever that particular decision, it may be our girlfriend. Maybe our boyfriend. It may be about a doctrinal matter that has come before a congregation. It may be about whether I can go to this path in career choice or not go this path because it will not help me draw near to God. But we reason and weigh them because, as I've said to you already, neutrality is not an option before God. We must make our choice where we stand. How true is that in matters of morality? That you need to know where you stand before the temptation comes. Isn't that what Joseph had very clear in his mind? Before you're in an apartment with your girlfriend or boyfriend alone and there's nobody else there and you're sitting on a couch together, you have to make up your mind before temptation strikes where you will stand, what you will do. When Joseph was tempted, and temptations come to us that way, they just come out of the blue sometimes, and we're not on our guard, as we say. But even if I'm not on my guard, if my mind has already waited and I've made up my mind about that position, I take this stand. Joseph said, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He had already won the battle. We can't decide based upon feelings or upon others. Feelings will lead us down the wrong path, won't they? And others, we cannot make our decision based upon who our peers are, who our friends are, who our family is, even who our church is. When Paul stood before Festus and reasoned about righteousness and self-control and all those things, that was Felix, but we're going to say he reasoned before Festus the same. About Jesus. Festus all of a sudden shouts out in front of all these powerful people, Paul, you are out of your mind. Your great learning is driving you out of your mind. How many of us want somebody to look at us and say, that's the most stupid thing I've ever heard, if we present Christianity to them? Maybe it's our professor before the class. Maybe it's a boss who has the right to fire us and our job comes to an end. Or it's our mother and father that say, you will no longer have any place in this family if you go that direction. But we make our decisions, as the book of Galatians says, even if we are an angel from heaven, or to preach to you a gospel contrary to the one we preach to you, let him be accursed. Our mind is made up. So look at verse 25, what he had to choose. How he had to take a position on this. To be mistreated with the people of God or to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. And I'll tell you what's true always about the pleasures of sin. Yes, they're enjoyable. They're earthly fulfilling. They thrill. But they're always just for a while. Always. The next woman or the next man, think of David, what he would give if he could have turned back the clock. the next pill, the next drink, the next joint, the next million, the next mansion, the next luxury car. How did Moses choose? That's not a very appealing path to endure suffering and ill treatment with the people of God versus live in the palace of the most mighty king at the time and all its wealth and all it brings, all the opportunities and pleasure and fun. And it says he weighed it and he chose. And in that, verse 26 says to us, he considered to think beforehand is what that word means. He considered, it says to us, the reproach of Christ, greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt for our thesis. He was looking to the reward, to the one who was invisible. Whenever you come to the crossroad, you have to look down the road. We say to our kids sometimes that very phrase, don't we? Have you looked down the road you're taking? A kid who's drinking and drugs and sleeping around with everybody, have you just thought down that road a little bit? Where is it going to end up? Everybody has to look down the road they're choosing to take. And Moses clearly saw the reproach of Christ. Think that the Hebrew author ties what he was doing, even though he never knew the Messiah. But all of it's pointing, all that Abraham was doing and has brought now to pass this great nation is pointing to Christ. Greater wealth than all that Egypt could offer. And Moses fixed his attention on that. So the text says to us then at verse 27, he left Egypt. The decision that we make to leave the familiar is a hard decision to make. To leave, as we've already talked about, family and friends. And probably even more so for us as American Christians. I can use that terminology. To leave all our things and our stuff and our homes and our belongings. You know what we think about a family? And this is a true story. A family in a church in Dallas that left America. Lock, stock, and barrel. Packed up all the kids. Think about having kids the ages of the ones that we're looking at. Little and bigger. Lock, stock, and barrel. And went to Vietnam to preach the gospel. You know what grandparents say about that sometimes? What are you doing? I'll never see these grandkids again. I mean, have you ever even thought about what that I won't be able to see them again? And they put a roadblock in their way. Or how idiotic is that, that you'd sell your house? We just gave you the money for a down payment on that house. And on you could go. Because all of us find ourselves exactly where the rich young ruler was. And Jesus looks at him and knows there's one thing standing between him and God. Sell all you have and follow me. And he went away sorrowful. For he had great possessions. In the balance. Sell all and follow me. But I have all these possessions. What these people in the book of Hebrews, particularly Moses that we're looking at, what they lost they couldn't keep anyway. What they gained they never could lose. When Rockefeller died, looking over his great paintings, he had a heart attack and died. They asked one of his subordinates that tended to him, how much? One of the reporters said, how much did he leave? He said, all of it. We come into this world with nothing and we will leave this world with nothing. But if we hang on to it like it's everything, Moses would not do that. And so finally, he did the craziest thing. Look at verse 29. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. I didn't ask Brother Henson to read that passage, but now I don't have to. I want you to think about what God told him to do. You kill a lamb. Every household You're too small, you join another household, but you kill a lamb and you take its blood and you put it on the doorpost and the lintel of the house. And can you imagine them deciding to do that, that they would spread that lamb's blood, paint it on their doorway. And then they were to roast the lamb in fire and to eat it with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs and the things that those things were told to us that they represented. And then they were to sit at the table fully dressed. He says with their sandals on. You imagine they like to kick their sandals off too when they're home. But you have your sandals on, your staff, your walking staff in your hand, and you be ready to leave. And then what we have never thought about, as much as we do need to think about it, they heard the most awful cry go up from Egypt. If you are a firstborn this morning in your family, your birth family, if you are a firstborn this morning, please raise your hand. I am a firstborn. I want the rest of you to look around. If these were all Egyptians, we would be dead. That movie Cecil B. DeMille painted of that green fog starts going, that mist starts coming, and it wraps itself even as Pharaoh is talking to his commander, and a young man comes and falls dead at his feet who was the son of the commander. And that pitiful Pharaoh who puts him before the dog head of a god of Egypt and tries to pray for that god to grant life again. There was, the book of Exodus says, not one home in all of Egypt where there was not someone dead. If you imagine the cries, they ate the lamb and held the staff in their hand, the bitter cry they had to listen to as the whole of Egypt cried for death. You and I can do the same thing that Moses did. For when I see the blood on the doorpost and the lintel, I will pass over you. He said, I will pass through Egypt and kill every firstborn. But I will pass over you. This morning you can be passed over. God can deliver you. In the PBS series, Downton Abbey tells the story of an early 20th century English earl as the life of England is drastically beginning to change and all of that lord and all of that lady business is going the way of all the earth. But Lady Mary Crawley, who is the eldest daughter to the Earl of Grantham, has suffered the death of her husband, Matthew, immediately after the birth of their firstborn son, George. He was killed in a tragic car accident. 6 months later, it advances and she's still in a great depression, a black depression after her husband's death. Her grandmother, the Dowager Countess, comes to her and finally awakens her out of her stupor of grief with these words. The fact is, she says, as Granny to her granddaughter, the fact is you have a straightforward choice before you. You must choose either death or life. You must choose to live or die. So Moses said to the people of God, as he would not be able to enter the land of Canaan, because of his disobedience, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I've set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life, that you and your offspring may live. And that clear choice is placed before each of us this morning, while we stand, while we sing.